Welcome to the Trilux Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Smith, and I'm joined by producer
Cooper Maz.
If you're tuning in for the first time, the Trilux Podcast is a bi-weekly deep dive into all things marketing. We sit down with experts in various fields of marketing, many of whom are our team members, to get their perspectives on the latest marketing news and other industry topics. Today, we're talking with Chad Adams, Senior Video Production Manager, about how our video department prepares to shoot marketing videos for our clients. But first, we've got to get some of the latest marketing news. Are you ready, Cooper?
I'm always ready.
Okay, first up in marketing news, Coachella's back, if you didn't know. The Music and Arts Festival returned this week after its two-year COVID hiatus, featuring brands like Lay's, Meta, and Absolut Vodka. Brands are returning with an emphasis on virtual, offering NFTs, metaverse access, creator tools, and tokens to unlock real-world experiences.
You know, it's kind of interesting kind of looking at Coachella from the outside perspective now, because it's it is very much more media focused than even like being there. Like even the people who are there, it's just more about showing that you're there with the brands, with the media presence there. You know, a lot of people are watching it virtually now.
Absolutely. And it's very interesting that Coachella is finally back to their pre-pandemic attendee levels. And I mean, I think it's really going to show how brands are able to balance both the in-person events and the what, you know, a lot of people want and still expect to do virtually. So it's great to see that there's still a marriage of that going forward. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going away. I still think that there's probably a lot of brands that are relieved that there's a large in-person event for mm-hmm. people to go. Everybody's got eyes on everyone else, what everyone else is eating, drinking, mm-hmm. wearing, doing.
Coachella is kind of the start of music festival season. So mm-hmm. it kind of leads on a lot of trends for music festivals. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out with places like Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo, you name it, yeah. even 8035 here.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be great to see. And Hinterland later this year.
Oh, that's true.
In the Des Moines area.
Next up, Spotify recently rebranded its live audio app, Green Room, to Spotify Live, and has also added live audio for select original programming to its main app. Independent creators can still go live in the Spotify Live app.
So Green Room was really built for Spotify to rival Clubhouse, but it's been kind of a slow start since it launched last summer. I think rebranding Spotify Live will definitely help in the search results when people go, you know, searching Spotify and its products in the App Store. But it just is a further conversation on people wanting to take part in live audio conversations. People want to be involved in conversations as they're happening, feel like they're having a more intimate experience with the hosts or the influencers or whoever that might be.
Were you aware of Green Room before they did this rebrand, or how involved were you in that?
Not really. Not personally at all. Only because I work at a marketing agency.
Yeah. I used it a little bit, but I feel like the thing that's going to run up against live audio is always the timing of everything mm-hmm. and branding and just kind of getting people over to another app is always going to be hard. But I think this is a step in the right direction, mm-hmm. rebranding it as Spotify Live than just Green Room, because mm-hmm. I even had a hard time searching, not hard time, but like searching for Green Room, because maybe there's another app called Green Room or Green something. So yeah. Just calling it Spotify. So if you search Spotify, there's Spotify and then there's Spotify Live.
Right. They already have that fabulous name recognition of Spotify.
Yeah.
And, you know, why
mess with that?
Yeah, I wonder why they did. I'd have to do a little bit more research on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Google has recently rolled out next stage testing of its privacy sandbox tool. Sandbox serves as Google's proposed replacement of third-party cookies advertising in Chrome, as third-party cookies tracking is slated to be phased out as early as 2023. The proposal is supposed to balance users' privacy while pleasing marketers with just enough opportunity to generate digital ad revenue. Privacy Sandbox will use what they call topics to show the subjects internet browsers are searching, but Privacy Sandbox will edit the list of sites to maintain users' privacy.
So this just feels like another step for Google, and really Google's in lockstep with a couple other companies like Apple mm-hmm. in terms of just trying to get rid of third-party cookies and having a more personal, it feels like almost creating a more personalized experience that we as the user choose instead of having third-party cookies track and guess almost. That's kind of what this feels like to me. And I say this realizing that some of our audience doesn't know what third-party cookies are.
So, and if any of our listeners don't understand what third-party cookies tracking are, you certainly are not alone. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty opaque topic. But third-party cookies tracking essentially is a way for a third-party organization to see what Cooper you're searching when you, you know, browse the web or anything mm-hmm. that you're doing. Your computer is identified with a piece of code that then goes on that website if you're searching for shoes. Then, you know, perhaps a marketer or advertiser can find your code on that shoes website. Mm-hmm. So Google and Apple and many other tech giants had said, you know, we understand that we haven't been that clear with how we're using consumers' data, and they should know about that. And there's privacy concerns, rightly so. But what they've done is kind of you try to backtrack, and they have not done it well, especially in Google's case. Apple has already rolled out some of the features that make it harder for people's data to be tracked online. Google had said that they're going to do away with third-party cookies tracking in 2022. Then, since they're kind of so up in the air about it and haven't figured out what they're going to do, they pushed that back to maybe the second half of 2023, maybe. We'll see what happens. This is just another step in Google's long journey to end third-party cookies tracking capabilities. But we'll see if Sandbox is the right marriage of that data privacy versus what marketers and all advertisers and many brands have expected to get from Google.
Michaela, have you been really feeling much of a change since third-party cookies have been going away? Because I think I have, especially on like my YouTube advertisements. Sometimes I'll just get like a 45-minute advertisement for like a documentary about Napoleon or something, you know?
Yeah.
Just like really weird videos.
It's going to be, I mean, and we have a couple of really good Trilux journals about this topic on Trilux.com, but I think, you know, it sounds nice and it sounds for consumers like it's going to be this great thing that we're finally getting our privacy back. Mm-hmm. A privacy sandbox that Google is really rolling out just shows you that you're not getting your privacy back. They're still tracking the subjects that you're using. They're just, you know, maybe putting a slight screen on it. It's, you know, you can kind of see what you're tracking. Maybe they'll edit a little bit for you. So it's not seeing everything, but overall, it's going to be a worse web experience. Mm-hmm. I'm having to, every website I go on, I have to accept, you know,
trust,
the cookies tracking
trust.
Multiple yeah. times. Every time I get on it, sometimes every time I go to a different page on the same website, mm-hmm. you're going to have, you know, your marketers are still going to send you promoted content, but it's just going to be less targeted for you.
Yeah.
So you're still going to get a barrage of content. It's just going to be less of what you want to see.
Yeah. So I feel like this is going to be kind of a half step to trying to fix that moving forward.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to watch that play out.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Awesome. Well, stay tuned for our conversation with Chad Adams.
Welcome back to the Trilux Podcast. With you, as always, I'm Kramer McCluckey with my co-host,
Michaela Smith.
Chad, what's your title?
You know, my title on my business card, so to say, is Video Production Manager, Senior Video Production Manager. And it's just Trilux's way of not, I don't know, in the video world, that doesn't exist.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're like, you're a cinematographer or, you know, you're a producer. We have producer editor. We finally got that changed for the producer editors because that's what they're doing.
Good.
But like senior video production manager, I don't know what that means. I basically came in and just said, I kind of do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I won't change any of that based on my title.
Right.
That's fair.
So I sometimes look at the title, senior video production manager. I make sure everything's organized on the shelf. Or swept,
right.
You know, like the production's going well, but I'm actually like, I don't know.
Yeah, doing it all.
I like to, yeah, I've done it all, I guess, in this industry for the most part. And I say this industry, we're in a video world at an advertising agency. We are not making films and movies and like, you know, yes, we'll do an occasional documentary, short form, but we're not creating an hour and 30-minute long doc that's going to be seen on Netflix. We emulate that all the time. We try to mimic them and learn from those documentaries, which we really like. Something we strive for as a team, I guess. We have a very artistic video team downstairs that really does gravitate towards that type of editing and style, which I think helps make us shine in this town. Yeah. A small video town of Des Moines, I would say.
When you're trying to assemble a team that's kind of more like that style than the traditional, you know, TV spot style, how do you go about that?
So I guess in the advertising world, a lot of people ask, so you make TV commercials, right? And I say, yeah, we make an occasional TV commercial, but anymore, I think the industry has shifted. You know, you strive for a really good TV commercial in a 30-second spot, but it goes beyond that. And I guess as Trilix, we kind of go towards the storytelling aspect of things because everything does have a story, a unique story. And if you can pull something out of someone, something, some business in 30 seconds that tells a little bit of a story for a campaign that you're trying to convey, then I think we did our job well.
So you're looking at it kind of more holistically than just the platform it's going to end up on as, you know, commercial on broadcast TV, maybe.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like today we're talking about a TV commercial for one of our clients and, you know, there's a lot that goes into a TV commercial. I'm not going to say that more goes into a TV commercial than it goes on online, but I mean, let's be honest, in certain scenarios in any business that you work in, There's a level of eyeballs that sees something when it lives and it's a one and done, like we call them one and duns, I guess. And those are your, videos that maybe just get played once at an event, for instance. So there's more of a live aspect to things and more of a live mentality that we take towards those if something were to happen in that production, the audio goes out for a split second. You know, we just live with it and we just say, you know, that's just part of how this industry works. When it's on TV and you could have 2 million people watching it at any given time, there's a lot of critiques that can happen. And a lot of things that we don't want to go wrong. We want it to be as perfect as possibly can. And I'm not saying that we don't do that for all videos and all scenarios, but again, that's where budget kind of does dictate what we are able to do. So when you do a TV commercial, traditionally, you know, you have, that's why you see 15 people standing around acting like they're doing nothing, but they all have a specific job that they're in charge of that day. One of the things we were just talking about is, are we going to have this be a 2 or 3 person crew, or are we going to have are we going to have 10 people on set? And I said, I would love to have 10 people on set because I don't want to be responsible for when Jimmy John's is going to show up to make sure that this person's belly is full when I'm in charge of running the camera and making sure the location is scouted correctly. There's not a lawnmower going on. You know, the audio's mm-hmm. on point. Lighting is yep. taken care of. All those little things, you know, that I should be in charge of running camera, I guess, that day. That should be my goal. Are we at the right angle? Are we have the right lens choice on? Things like that. So again, there's just a lot that is involved, I guess, in making these things work correctly. And to answer the question, go back to the question. We do it all, I guess, here at Trilix. So 30-second spot to a internal 1 minute long video or a 20-minute long video on a certain piece of equipment that somebody needs educated on, we will create that commercial to educate so individual on what that is.
I think you bring up a good point about, you know, so many people think that video production is just about showing up that day on the set and you're going to shoot some video and hopefully, you know, whoever you need and whatever you need is there. How important is that planning process and how far in advance does that start before shoot day?
So in a perfect world, the production, we call it pre-production, I guess, in regards to how that works. The pre-production teams, which is the production and post-production team. So we all kind of work throughout the entire process. Some of us emphasizing more time on the pre-production than on the post-production, but all having an end goal in mind, which is the final edit, which would be considered your post-production aspect of a video. We all have to be on the same page and really understand what it is that our end goal is going to be. So in any given such project, you know, pre-production can be one day, or it can be a month. It just depends on how elaborate that shoot is. So for instance, what I was just discussing with having, let's just say, you know, 5 different locations in one given day with 7 different talents that each have 2 scenes each with props. Those take a little bit more pre-production planning because we just have to think of every scene. Everyone has to have their individual responsibility. So, you know, we'll put somebody on talent. That talent has to be diverse. That's one thing that obviously in marketing that we have to be really aware of, depending on what we're trying to accomplish. And a diverse set of talent is something that we usually strive for. And that's just marketing, you know, and it, however you want to present that, represent that, take that. It's just something that we're always aware of. And we want to be representable in a market based on what the client's end goal is going to be. And then again, there's props. So what's that person wearing? If their backpack's on, what's on that backpack? Can it be logoed? Their tennis shoes, same. If we change scenes and it's a different day, do we have a different wardrobe? But it's this, literally the next scene, that's 20 minutes later, but we're acting as if it's a different day. Match cuts, camera angles, are we wanting to emulate certain scenes so that the editor can have a unique ability to edit in a certain way, or the graphics person can utilize graphics where they're going to go. So again, the list in my mind goes on and on and on. Do we have the right XLR cable to plug into the correct microphone that day? Are the lenses cleaned? Do we have a generator on set so we can run a light? And if that generator needs to be on set, do we have a long enough extension cord that it can reach from the van and or a supply of electricity to get us to what part? I say generator, don't need it don't need electricity for a generator. It's going to supply it, but do we have a cord long enough to reach the talent or the lighting that we're trying to mimic? I don't know. It never ends with me. But those are the things that I've learned over time. One of the things I always say on set is I show up, I'll scout a location and I will ask them, do you have maintenance scheduled for tomorrow? And if you do, where is it and what's going on? Is the lawn mowing company mowing and weed eating tomorrow? Is there anything going on the street, utilities in this neighborhood that we need to be aware of? Because the last thing that we want to do is be hoping to be enclosed into this room doing interviews all day long. And the city decided that today's the day to bust the street up to redo the sewer line. I said, I've been put in all of those situations, and you have to nicely, as a production person, go and ask if they can postpone anything, if they can stop what they're doing. And the level of that, just the intricacies of that is different just based on who it is. If the lawn mowing crew comes, you can sometimes tell them, why don't you come back tomorrow if it's possible? We're okay with you not mowing today. The city busting up the street, we basically have to just flip gears and reset and find something that works to better be able to do what we do, because the client, you know, in those scenarios, it costs a lot of money to set up a production day and choreograph that in a way that gets everyone there. And if you have to cancel something, the last thing you want to do is have to cancel something. You know? So knock on wood, I've only been sick once on a shoot day. Came down with the flu late at night, and the last thing I wanted to do was call the client and let them know that I wasn't going to be able to make their shoot that we've been planning for over a month, month and a half, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, involved in this whole entire shoot. And when you're a crew that gets relied on, and, you know, you act as more than one person, then you have to figure something out quickly. And you don't always have a backup person to do what your job necessarily entails for that day. So again, I don't know. Again, there's always something that needs to be thought about, I guess, in regards to creating the perfect video.
It's quite a list.
Yeah. How does a client's like ask for the video impact the format of video that you guys decide to make? Like if they ask for something to promote a new product or something to promote company culture, you know, how do you guys kind of then jump to translating that into a certain type of video?
So if it's a product-based video, obviously there's going to be more opportunity for creative edits on social platforms that can get utilized. Not saying that social platforms cannot take a story and make them interesting. I think that is something that our group on the social side, the creative social discussions, is they might be striving for opportunities to make a single talking head story more appealing in the 2 seconds that you have to capture somebody's attention on a social platform, where a product is something that people see all the time, I guess, out there in the TV world of, and I say product, you know, it's just, think about a cheeseburger. You're going to look at it for a split second because you might be really hungry. If you see a person sitting there in a chair and you're just staring at them, how do you creatively make that person gravitate and engage within those 2 seconds? So product-based videos instantly get towards that, you know, Snapchat, TikTok, Facebook, social, Instagram type environments that can be more front and center. So there's going to be a lot of staging, lighting, scenes with those. Is there voiceover? I don't know. It's just it's a completely different type of advertisement that does take a lot more strategic planning, I guess. When you sit and talk to somebody on a video, and I know it's just going to live on a website, it's going to be their cultural piece. It's a lot easier just to, you know, engage someone in conversation and get a story out of them that then we can visually go tell after we kind of lock the story down. So I don't know if that answered the question or not, but
no, absolutely.
So when you're planning for everything down to the minutiae of, you know, what is the lighting in this environment look like? What exact sound equipment do I need? How do you help communicate that to both your team and to the client on shoot day?
So let's just take lighting, for instance. You know, a lot of clients, they aren't necessarily coming in with expectations on certain lighting, unless it is, you know, maybe a hype video scenario, or they're just completely into, you know, cinematic film techniques, I guess, is what we kind of would consider the differentiation on lighting. So it's really something that our production team kind of takes care of internally, kind of deciding what look and feel we want to go with. And if a client does come in with kind of a visual board that they have put together or something that they're looking for, we can then ask, you know, we don't necessarily ask, oh, do you want a green light striking your back or filling your face or whatnot? But if they, we would present them opportunities of things that we might want to try and do as a production team, because we always want to expand our portfolio on what it is and what capabilities that we do have internally here. And a lot of times we don't get that creative opportunity because there's a pretty standard lighting scenario. A lot of times just to, you know, make things look real. It comes down to what it is that we're trying to accomplish. If we're doing a hype video, everything's on the table. It's free game creatively and whatever we want to do, you know, to make it be as unique and different as possible, because that's what it is ultimately that we're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to just light somebody in their office, it's going to look like they're in an office. But it still takes a lot for us to discuss. So yes, that is something that we internally talk about a lot from a lighting standpoint. And, you know, I guess one thing we ask as a group is, anyone see anything cool this weekend that they want to try to, you know, utilize in our next project? Mm-hmm. And that's something that we talk about all the time, whether that's camera movement, you know, lens style, angles of shoot, and lighting, you know, and then audio and sound, which is something that is a whole nother element of video, is that sound design that goes on the back end. Not a lot of people understand what is all involved and entailed in putting together a good sound design. But when you watch some movie or anything like that, listen for what you're looking at, not just the words coming out of somebody's mouth. But, you know, if they're in their driveway and they shut the door to their car, you're going to hear keys jiggle. You're going to hear footsteps get out of a car. You're going to hear a hand touching a handle or a door. You're going to see the little boy across the street that's on his bike in his driveway. You're going to hear the tires on the sidewalk ever so slightly. The bird's going to be chirping in the tree. The neighbor might be, you know, just finishing up mowing his lawn, and the water might be running because the window's open in the kitchen in the house that he's about to walk into because dinner's almost ready. But you don't see any of that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of layers to it.
Yeah. So those are the things that, you know, it's a whole nother element. And again, something that doesn't always get put into the budgets of making something. And I'll take it back to the, you know, one of the first questions about television commercials. That's why they're high budget. 30 seconds, 45 seconds, 60 seconds. There's a lot that can go on in order to capture somebody's attention. And that's ultimately what you're trying to do. You spend a lot of money putting that television commercial on TV or in whatever platform it needs to be put on. And you want to do your very best as a production company to make that possible. Now, it's not possible in every single scenario. A lot of scenarios, it's not possible. So then you have to kind of break down what it is that they're actually trying to accomplish. And if that is just the talking head in a silent scenario with no music, and it's just the words coming out of somebody's mouth, that's going to be the most impactful. And that's what we're going to get. And we'll do, you know, everything is based on budget. And I hate to say that because the world revolves around money. And there's just, you know, only so much you can do, because again, we could stay up and edit for, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as an internal team, but that just isn't the case. We have to hire certain individuals, you know, or utilize different aspects of our team's time is really what it comes down to. Are we going to spend all of our time making a creative visual edit and color correcting this thing perfect? Or are we going to spend our time and money on sound design? You know, I wish I could say I'm a big believer always of just making it be the best it possibly can be. But in a piece, if you ask an artist, a piece of art is never done.
Right.
There's just always a time where you just have to put your paintbrush down and be done and move on to your next thing. Yeah. 'Cause that's the only way that you're going to grow and better understand what questions to ask somebody. You know, because again, now it comes down to going back to the question on what do you ask a client? Those are the things you ask a client. You want this thing, you want us to, you know, if you want the color correction to be like this, then we're going to spend a lot of our time on color correction, and color correction is going to cost X. There's sound design elements. There's, you know, and just flat out edit time. And then there's codecs and qualities of video that we're going to be shooting. But again, it just comes down to the evil question of how much money are you wanting to put towards this video?
Yeah. No getting around it.
Nope. And one of the biggest, you know, I'm very transparent, I guess. And this is just some of the confidence I've had just working in this industry. And, you know, when I come from a background of working for myself, James and I started a video company. So we had to, you know, not always skate around the idea of, you know, the last question in every meeting. So what's your budget? Well, we just talked about all these cool things and just built a picture in your head on exactly what we can do. And then we finally ask you what your budget is. And you tell me it's a fifth of what we just talked about. Well, we might as well just flat out, right when we get into the room, just start talking, you know, what kind of budget are we looking at? Because the question that then gets reverted back to the production company always is, well, how much do you think it would cost to do this? And for me, my question always is, well, I can shoot this video for $10,000, or I can, your budget could be $10,000, or it could be up to $100,000. Like I can make a TV commercial at $100,000 because it's going to have every single element that we can throw towards it involved. Or I can bare bones skeleton crew it and we can go out and shoot rogue on the street, but that's what your video is going to look like. So again, and that's a style. There's nothing wrong with that style of video. You just might not be running with the big dogs that are out there shooting Nike, Under Armour, Cheerios, McDonald's, you know, those types of commercials that are out there. So again, it really comes down to what it is that you like. And we can, you know, pretty much take care of any budget, big or small, I guess, and do what we want. And again, it's not always about the money for us. It's always about, you know, how creative we can be. And I'm not going after it saying, you know, I'm going to sound design this thing because I'm going to put more money in my pocket. I'm going to go at this thing because I want to create really cool sound design pieces. You know, I think it's a huge part of what videos are. We just don't always get that opportunity.
I think that's a really important point, and it speaks to the importance of having a really frank conversation about budget early, because the client's not going to be well served by talking about all these pie in the sky ideas. And then at the end of the day, okay, you know, you have a very minuscule budget to work with, but I still want you to try to pull this stuff off, because then it's not going to look good for anybody. But if you kind of know the budget right from the start, that enables you guys to scope things appropriately, and you end up with what's going to be a high quality piece that at any budget level, but it at least works for the client in that way.
Yeah. And it's an experience. You know, we want the client to have the best experience they possibly can. And yeah, the pie in the sky, you know, is what we always strive for with clients, and just like painting that picture. It's just giving them an opportunity to understand what it is that's all involved and what we are all capable of doing. But it's also about the experience. When you come into something and, you know, and this is with anything, when you ask a friend to come over and help you on a a Weekend Warrior project and they say, what do you want for this? I mean, ultimately, if you turn around and gave them $150, they'd probably be like, thanks, man, for $150. If you look at them and say, here's a pizza, I'm going to order pizza and you can have some beer, which is usually what people say. Just order me some pizza and beer and I'll come over and have a good time. Now, again, it's your friend. You're supposed to help them out. But if it's a friend of a friend and, you know, it's just put yourself in that situation. I want to go over and I want to do the best that I possibly can, but I also want to go, man, I'm coming over and doing something for somebody that I don't really know. I told them I would do it and it's Sunday and all I want to be doing is sitting at home with my family. Again, it comes back down to, I don't ever want that to be the case in a video production situation. So when you do talk budget and you open it up and they are aware, it's all about that experience. So the more that we have the ability to work with and make that experience better. Again, when you show up on set and lunch is catered in, it's because somebody bought that lunch. It's not because it's part of the deal. Right. Everything's catered. The more you want to be catered to, the better off you feel, the better product you get. There's more involvement, more engagement, more of an ability of people to do exactly what it is that they're capable of doing and put their 100% into that day and that in the pre-production and in the post-production. Again, I hate bringing it back down to the money aspect of things. But it's all about budget. It's about opening up and just being aware of what things do cost. I mean, I don't think clients come in here,
they're not expecting it to be free.
No, they're not. They're not expecting it to be free at all, but they really do not always have a good understanding on what it actually costs to do things. And, the industry has shifted and it's changed and we all have video cameras in our pocket, but again, we can all shoot video. I will tell you that right now. We can all shoot it because we all can hit the record button. We all can't shoot video well.
Right. Can't shoot a professional video.
No, I can hammer a nail into a wall. I can promise you that. I surely cannot build a house.
Yep, 100%. So I know over the years, you and James and the rest of your team have been on a pretty wide spectrum of different types of productions, and ones where you've had lots of time to prepare and maybe ones where you haven't had nearly as much time to prepare, whether that's with Trilux or in your past life. But so just kind of thinking about that, how does a shoot day go differently when you've had time to check all these boxes in pre-production versus when you're kind of flying by the seat of your pants?
Yeah. So in the video industry, there's a term of run and gun. Run and gun is basically, there's a one man band scenario where I don't want to say that this industry is any different because they have their own way of doing things and they have criteria to meet and expectations to meet. And it's all about news and news broadcast. I mean, when you're a news journalism person and a cameraman out on the street and there's a story that comes up, you have, minutes to figure out how you're going to get there, what story is going to be told, and how you're going to get that onto the news that evening. Mm-hmm. It's what I consider kind of a run and gun situation where things happen very quickly. And in our situations, we have a little bit more time to react and think and do. So when we do run and gun, it might be a client that just wants us to go out and shoot quickly. They have, half a day for us to go do something. That's the kind of the budget they got allotted, and they can only really afford to pay for one person to go out and do so. So we send out a camera person who's also the audio person and is also the lighting person, and we go and do what we told them that we would do, whether that be a quick story or a lot of B-roll that gets shot. But that would be, a case where we are working quickly for a quick turnaround on a project. The other side of that is we do have a lot of time to work on something. And we divide and conquer as a team and we do things and we set up the best possible scenario with an audio person, a lighting person, a camera person. And then, there's obviously the second DP on set, who's making sure that the lenses are all ready to go and cleaned and what the DP, the main camera operator is ready to go. And then you have a B-roll person. And what I consider B-roll is your secondary camera shots that aren't just a talking head or an interview or whatever it is that you're trying to focus on, whatever's telling that story. You have that other person, that's out doing that task, on set as well. So I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe. You know, I've had the pleasure to be around you guys on some of those cases that are more like the latter, where you've got the time and the wherewithal to really throw all your resources at a project. And I've seen kind of the military precision that those shoot days run with. And I know that, you know, that would not be possible without putting a ton of thought into where are we going to be, who's going to be where, when, and who are we going to talk to first, how are we going to light them, and just the whole run of show for the entire day. So I guess, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, how do you guys approach putting together a run of show for a day like that, for a shoot day, when you've got a lot to capture in a limited amount of time, and how important is all that forethought?
So when you say the word run of show, you know, it's not a term that we necessarily utilize all the time on a shoot day. Obviously, there's a production schedule. And again, it really depends on what kind of production that we're trying to shoot. You know, 50% of the videos that we shoot are a talking head interview. And then we shoot ancillary B-roll to support the story. That is about, you know, I would say more than 50% of what we shoot a lot of the time. James and I, as two videographers and producers, editors, we kind of started our industry together in the wedding world. We would create what you would consider a very high level story of the bride and groom's day and the kind of the courtship that they had. And we would do this all in one day. So we would run a show with bride and groom the entire day and figure out exactly how we're going to tell a story that's not just show up to salon, go to bar with friends.
Mm-hmm.
We dive really deep into their courtship and their story. You know, we kind of vet them and try to understand what it is that we can pull that the audience may not know exists between the two of them or is a part of why they are doing what they're doing today, which is getting married. So we would, you know, pre-produce a whole storyline with them. And we're not creating a story. We're exemplifying, you know, and we're telling this story and reenacting some of these things with the bride and groom. So anyway, we would go through and produce these things knowing that we have to show this video 10 hours later at the reception in front of their entire wedding party.
And no pressure, right?
No pressure at all.
At least grooms and brides are infamously easy to work with.
Very easy, and everything is always on schedule. Uh-huh. People always say, you know, do you ever run into scheduling issues? And I say, well, we try to create the schedule just based on everyone thinks things can happen so fast. But I've been to very few weddings where anything's ever been on time, aside from walking down that aisle. That is always something that has to happen at that given time based on the rental of the space for the most part. You know, there's a choreographed set of time movements that happen as soon as you, so quote unquote, tie the knot, you know, for the rest of the remainder of the evening because of, you know, dinner, reception, all these things during the building up to that part of the day. It's just photographs and getting your makeup done, you know, and getting your hair done for the most part.
Right.
So again, we just try, you know, to create these stories and run of show so we can tell the best story that we possibly can. And we learned really early, you know, if we can handle this, we can handle just about anything. So we kind of prided ourselves in that understanding to take to the marketing world here at Trilix and just kind of take that same philosophy and run with it. So yeah, nothing overwhelms us, you know, for the most part. Yeah, we might get overwhelmed, but you may not ever know it. It's again, there's the confidence that comes into just understanding, you know, technical things happen all day long. Things break. Clients never going to know they break. And if they do, there's a lot of, you know, respect going both ways in regards to, you know, shit happens. Just use it. It's a word. It's a term. It's a phrase. We all live, you know, it happens to all of us. It's just how you poise yourself in those situations and work to, you know, for the greater good of what it is we're all trying to accomplish, which is an extremely balanced production for an end-all goal of a video that hopefully makes everyone happy and helps your ROI. Because again, that's what we're trying to do as well.
Yep, 100%. You know, I think going from brides and grooms on their wedding day to shooting clients, that, you know, it's all easier after that, right?
Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, Chad Adams, thank you so much for joining us on the Trilix podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think that'll do it.
We're here with another video team member, Sydney Dayball, video producer and editor. Thanks for joining us, Sydney.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we're going to get to know a little bit more of our video team members. We're going to play a game, Rapid Fire Questions. So the name of the game is Answer Them as Quickly as You Possibly Can. Only weird answers welcome. Ready? Okay. Sydney, what is the best part of your job?
Ooh, producing.
Your favorite season?
Fall.
Preferred way to eat eggs?
Scrambled.
Brunch or happy hour?
Brunch.
The name of your future child?
Remy.
First YouTube video?
Something Justin Bieber.
Documentaries or reality TV?
Documentaries.
Favorite candy?
Reese's.
Favorite music genre?
Country.
Favorite artist?
Morgan Wallen.
Shooting or editing?
Editing.
Color correction or sound design?
Sound design.
Weirdest pet peeve of yours?
Does red lights count?
Yeah, sure. I hate them too. Unexpected talent.
Can you like wiggle your ears or something?
Yes, actually.
Wait, really?
Me too.
I can do the worm. I can do the worm very well.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good. That's way better than wiggling your ears.
Wow.
Okay, the best movie or TV show?
Okay, well, my favorite movie ever is Lone Survivor.
I don't know that one.
With Mark Wahlberg, right?
Mark Wahlberg, Operation Red Wing.
Why does he keep coming up in here?
I love any, like, war movie or okay. That's based on, like, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah,
I love those movies.
Dunkirk. That was a good one.
Yes.
All right, last question I'm going to open up to the floor.
Ooh.
Peeps or... would you rather eat garbage? Because I would rather eat garbage.
What?
I love Peeps.
Oh my god!
I love Peeps.
No.
They're awesome.
Are you kidding?
And, okay,
you love them.
I like yes. when you. This
you want to say the word love?
I love Peeps.
So I like setting them out for long periods of time where they get like super hard.
I've heard
and
this.
Then,
no, it doesn't.
No, that's not,
nothing
that's
makes
not for
it better.
Me. I just fresh Peeps.
Oh, I like all Peeps and all Peeps.
Would you rather eat Peeps over like any other springtime candy?
See, no. Peeps, it's not like Peeps. A number one for me.
Okay.
You don't seek out Peeps. They're just around.
That's why
they're
I hate
like
them.
They're just like around, and you're like, oh, I'll have a Peep,
like
sure.
A pest.
That is actually so true. They're like right there in the middle of the grocery store. Yeah. You're like, oh, that looks good. Yeah, oh, I guess
like
I'll grab that.
It's not like a Cadbury cream egg, because those are incredible.
Oh, agree.
Yeah. I like the mini ones. The mini Cadburys are really good.
I'm going to go eat a Peep now.
Oh, gross.
Delicious.
Keep them all to yourself. Thank you for joining us, and it was great to get to know you a little bit more.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you to Chad Adams for walking us through how our video department goes through an extensive planning process. Join us for the next episode as we talk to senior producer and cinematographer James Drescher about how our team handles the video shoots. Don't forget to rate and subscribe the Trilux podcast on your podcast catcher of choice and follow along on Trilux social media. Thanks.